Chapter 7.
Over 1,000 tributaries contributed towards the Julis rapacious flow, a wrinkled network of rivers and streams gathering in the rainfall over an area of 1.5 million square kilometres. They emptied themselves into the main course at full volume throughout the whole 295 days of Lalonde's year, bringing with them immense amounts of silt, rotting vegetation, and broken trees. The turbulence and power of the huge flow were such that the water along the last 500 kilometres turned the same colour and thickness as milky coffee. By the time it reached the coast, the river's width had swollen to over 17 kilometres, and the sheer weight of water backed up for 2,000 kilometres behind it was awesome. At the mouth, it looked as though one sea was bleeding into another. For the final 100-kilometre stretch, the banks on the northern side were non-existent. Marshland extended up to 150 kilometres into the countryside. Named the Haltane Marsh, after the first reckless ecological assessment team member to venture a few brief kilometres inside its fringes, it proved an inhospitable zone of reeds and algae and sharp-toothed, lizard-analogue animals of varying sizes. No human explorer ever managed to traverse it. The ecological evaluators contented themselves with Haltane's sketchy report and the satellite survey pictures. When the wind blew from the north, it carried a powerful smell of corruption over the river into Durringham. To the city's residents, the Haltane Marsh had virtually assumed the quality of myth, a repository of bad luck and ghoulish creatures. The land on Julif's southern side, however, rose up to 12 metres above the surging brown waters. Sprawling aloof along the bank, Durringham was relatively safe from the most potent of the Julif's spring floods. Poised between spaceport and water, the city was the key to colonizing the entire river basin. The Julif provided the Lalonde Development Company with the greatest conceivable natural roadway into Amherst's interior. With its tributaries extending into every valley in the center of the landmass, there was no need to hack out and maintain expensive tracks in the jungle. Abundant wood provided the raw material for boat hulls, the simplest and cheapest form of travel possible. So shipbuilding swiftly became the capital's principal industry, with nearly a quarter of its population dependent on the success of the shipyards. Captains under contract to the LDC would take newly arrived colonist groups upriver and bring down the surplus produce from the established farms to be sold in the city. There were several hundred boats docking and sailing every day. The port, with its jetties and warehouses and fish markets and shipyards, grew until it stretched the entire length of the city. It was also the logical place to site the transients' dormitories. J. Hilton thought the dormitory was tremendously exciting. It was so different from anything in her life to date. A simple angled roof of easy-stack panels, 80 metres long, supported by a framework of metal girders. There were no walls. The LDC officer said they would have made it too hot inside. There was a concrete floor and row after row of hard wooden cots. She had slept in a sleeping bag the first night, right at the center of the dormitory with the rest of the group 7 kids. It had taken her an age to fall asleep. People kept talking, and the river made great swooshing noises as it flowed past the embankment. And she didn't think she would ever get used to the humidity. Her clothes hadn't been completely dry since she got off the space plane. During the day, the dormitory thronged with people, and the alleyways between the cots were great for chases and other games. Life underneath its rattling roof was very easy-going. Nothing was organized for the kids, so they were free to please themselves how they chose. She had spent the second day getting to know the other kids in Group 7. In the morning they ran riot among the adults, then after lunch they had all made their way down to the riverside to watch the boats. Jay had loved it. The whole port area looked like something out of an historical AV program, a slice of the Earth's Middle Ages preserved on a far planet. Everything was made of wood, and the boats were so beautiful, with their big paddles on each side, and tall iron stacks that sent out long plumes of grey-white smoke. Twice during the day the sky had clouded over, and rain had fallen like a solid sheet. The kids had all retreated under the dormitory roof, watching spellbound as the grey veil obscured the Julif and huge lightning bolts crashed overhead. She had never imagined the wild was so wild. But her mother wasn't worried, so she wasn't. Sitting down and just watching had never been such fun before. She couldn't think how wonderful it was going to be actually travelling on a riverboat. From a starship one day to a paddle steamer the next, life was glorious.